Triumphs of the Spirit, Part 1. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. Mark 12:30. The history of Christianity down through the ages has been highlighted by those few blessed souls who accepted Christ's teachings at face value and strove with all their powers to practice them. The unique and qualifying principles taught by Christ produced spiritual heroes like Francis of Assisi and Teresa of Lisieux in the millennium, and Saint Anthony of Egypt in the last. It was the fame of this Anthony in the 4th century that inspired thousands to renounce everything and join the legion of men and women who lived pure lives of prayer, austerity, and contemplation in the vast remote desert of Egypt. Ironically, this unparalleled flowering of deep spiritual yearning was directly rooted in the oppressive policies of the Roman Empire. By the year 3000 AD, fractures in the Roman Empire were a serious concern to the Emperor Diocletian. In his efforts to further unite and control his domain, he sought, like other rulers in the past, religious conformity. This resulted in the last great persecutions to the sect known as the Christians. Religious persecution drove the youthful Paul of Tarsus to the Egyptian desert. He is said to be the first Christian documented to devote his life to solitary prayer in the remote parts of the North African desert. Reaching an isolated rocky region, he found a large cave containing an open courtyard with a huge palm tree and a spring of running water. Nearby were chisels, anvils, and hammers used for the minting of money. Egyptian records show that this place had been a mint where false money was coined during the time of Antony and Cleopatra. Paul remained there in solitary contemplation for nearly 100 years, utilizing the palm leaves for his clothes and the palm fruit for his food. Paul's perfect self-conquest and undivided love for God would have never been known to man if not for the divine revelation given to Saint Anthony of Egypt, who was by far the most famous of the earliest holy desert dwellers. It was Anthony's disciple, Pachomius, who founded communities of ascetics in the desert, and from this beginning, the tradition of Christian monasticism began. Once Constantine of Great, the Emperor of Rome, formally declared himself a Christian in 324 AD, the Western civilization enthusiastically embraced the religion of Rome. The teachings of Christ quickly blossomed, producing a bountiful harvest of deep religious fervor. The tales of the heroic spiritual efforts of the desert fathers captured the imagination and hearts of the faithful throughout the Roman Empire, and by the 5th century, the monasteries of Egypt and the Middle East were crowded with aspirants struggling for perfection. The histories and teachings of many of these illumined souls from this golden era of Christian asceticism were documented and passed down to us through the centuries. The great distance of time hasn't weakened the power and glory of those holy ascetics, both men and women, who strove for perfection. During this period, the monk Palladius and several other desert monks traveled from Alexandria in the north down through the Nile River region, searching out the famous hermits, monasteries, and holy men and women of each territory. The record of the travels and interviews, and that of other histories and dialogues from this era, forms a valuable source of inspiration and guidance. An English translation is available in 2 volumes under the title The Paradise of the Holy Fathers. The extent that Christian charity and ascetic ideals had spread can be appreciated or truly marveled at by the description of the city of Oxyrhynchus. And we came also to Oxyrhynchus, a great city in the Thebesus, but we are not able to relate all the wonderful things which we saw therein, for the city is so full of habitations of the brethren that the walls thereof are well nigh thrust out with them. So many are the brethren, and there are so many other monasteries round about the walls on the outside, that one would think that they were another city, and the sanctuaries of the city, and the temples which are therein, and all the spaces about them are filled with the monks. One might think that the monks were not very much fewer in numbers than the ordinary inhabitants of the city. Now, the people said that the monks who lived inside were 5,000 in number, and that 5,000 brethren lived round about it, and all the inhabitants of the city were believers, and the officers and the princes of the city, who were lavish in their gifts to the congregations, used to place watchers at the gates and entrances thereof, that if they saw any needy person or any stranger, they might bring him to them, in order that they might supply his need from their gifts. And what shall we say concerning the fear of God, which was in these men to such a degree that when they saw us who were strangers passing through the streets, they drew high like angels unto us and helped us. Now we would make known that which we have learned from the holy bishop who was there, namely, that he had under his authority 10,000 monks and 20,000 virgins. I am wholly unable to express how great is the love of strangers and the affection which exists among these men and women for our cloaks and the other portions of our apparel were well nigh torn to rags by the force which each one of them, in the ardor of his love, displayed in dragging us to his home. And we saw there multitudes of fathers and great monks who possessed gifts of diverse kinds. Even allowing for some embellishment in this account, one can imagine the delight of the pious monks upon reaching that blessed city. But edifying as this description is, it is the struggles, sacrifices, spontaneous acts of charity, spiritual ecstasies, and the sayings of the accomplished ascetics that, if read with the devotion and faith, quickly fills the soul with sincere yearning, right direction, and dispassion. The Paradise of the Holy Fathers speaks to us of the inner paradise which ever stands before us and within us, and will immediately open to us if we but seek that paradise alone. Blessed Macarius said, "This is the truth. If a monk regards contempt as praise, poverty as riches, and hunger as a feast, he will never die." Abbess Synclitica of holy memory said, "There is labor and great struggle for the impious who are converted to God, but after that comes inexpressible joy. A man who wants to light a fire first is plagued by smoke, and the smoke drives him to tears. Yet finally, he gets a fire that he wants." So also it is written, our God is a consuming fire. Hence, we ought to light the divine fire in ourselves with labor and with tears. One of the monks called Serapion sold his book of the Gospels and gave the money to those who were hungry, saying, "I have sold the book which told me to sell all that I had and give to the poor." Theophilus of holy memory, Bishop of Alexandria, journeyed to Sète, and the brethren coming together said to Abbot Pambo, "Say a word or two to the bishop that his soul may be edified in this place." The elder replied, "If he is not edified by my silence, there is no hope that he will be edified by my words." Continued in the November-December issue.